Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
I'm delighted to introduce my guest today who, let me read from her new website, Currency. A prominent voice in print and broadcast financial journalism with a sharp edge in market and company news, former Financial Mail money editor and Business Day TV anchor, Julieta Talevi, as I haven't introduced her, boasts an influential digital footprint that commands industry respect. Julia, welcome to the IR show on Chai FM. And before we sort of get into the main topic, which might surprise people a little, what is Currency?
Thank you very much, Sarah, for having me. Currency is a new business publication that we launched a couple of months ago. Myself, Rob Rose, who's a very well-known name in financial journalism. Sorry, that's my. Let me turn my emails off. Sarah Batendach, who used to be the life editor at the FM and editor of Wanted. Vernon Vessels, who is a bureau chief at Bloomberg. We felt that there was a need for, I suppose, a snappier, fresh business voice. The companies from which we sprung, Financial Mail, is under quite a lot of pressure. We didn't agree with the managerial direction that its owner, Arena Holdings, was taking. In fact, we tried to buy the Financial Mail, but were rebuffed. And so our position there was untenable, so we left and to set up this publication.
Well, I had a very quick look at your at your website, and it certainly sort of, to the non-financial person like me, it has an element of fun about it. I mean, serious issues are being dealt with, but it certainly has an element of fun. Not so much fun, but out of interest, you and this is what I'd like to talk to you about today, is you've teamed up with Daily Maverick on articles about the Johannesburg Art Gallery.
Yeah.
And there have been two articles to see, one by Ferial Hafiji at Daily Maverick and one by yourself on the dire state of the art gallery. What is it about this particular subject that made you get involved?
Well, so Sarah Batendach is deeply immersed in the arts. She does part-time work for Everard Reed Gallery. She's very knowledgeable about the art world, and we were just talking to a few people within the art world about the deplorable state of the Johannesburg Art Gallery. Ferial had also followed the story. I mean, Ferial and I are kind of the banshees of Joburg on Twitter, I suppose. We both care deeply about our city, and we hate what's happening to it. So Ferial and I chatted about the fact that we were both covering what is happening at the Johannesburg Art Gallery, and thought, okay, well, let's collaborate in the sense that we'll run Daily Maverick's pieces, they'll run ours. You know, Daily Maverick has huge reach. We're still a little fledgling publication, mm-hmm. so you know, it was great to see our stuff on Daily Maverick. And we just thought, well, let's try and tag team because there's so many issues in Joburg. And this is one of them, and you could regard it as a lesser issue. I mean, considering what's happening to Joburg water, you know, so many suburbs today still don't have any water. You know, that's a life and death issue, actually. Joburg, the state of the art gallery, you could argue, is not a life and death issue, and it's a point that I made in the article that I wrote. But it is still an incredible cultural heritage, and it's also got a financial value to it, and it's being squandered in all senses by utter mismanagement. And so that's kind of why we were both looking at it and thought, okay, well, let's try and team up, even if we write separate stories or if we write a story together. You know, we're really dismayed at what's happening, so let's try and put our voices behind trying to fix the situation.
Well, back in the day, when I was younger, I went to the gallery quite often, and it was actually extraordinary. I mean, not big, but the collection was amazing and became more and more diverse and more interesting and more reflective of South African art historically and currently. But I did an interview about a year and a half ago about the removal of the Brenthurst collection, the return of the collection to the Brenthurst Foundation. And it was certainly clear before then, but certainly made clear then, what a dire state the art gallery was in.
Yeah.
Can you give us a brief idea of exactly what you found there? What is happening there or not happening there, both in terms of the art, in terms of the state of the gallery, and in terms of the way the city is dealing with it?
So the key problem, if you like, is the state of the building. Mm. And it leaked apparently from the get-go. Well, it had this amazing extension that was built in 1986. It was part of the centenary year for the Joburg Art Gallery. It was award-winning, but it was very faulty in that it leaked. And so, and I think there's a very old kind of plumbing system that has to get pumped out. So the gallery building itself is a problem. It's the biggest problem. And there were numerous half-baked attempts at restoration, which are in themselves a story worth to write about, mm. because the work was done. It was done improperly. They tried to fix the roof, and all the copper was stripped by contractors and stolen. I mean, you know, in the process of trying to fix the thing, they made it worse. So the building condition is such that the artworks that are stored within the building are in a state of peril because the building leaks. It's now got black mold. But that's the one aspect. The other state is kind of the mismanagement. I mean, you've got an art gallery. Okay, it's in a bad part of town. It never used to be, but it's become, you know, part of the, you know, inner city decay. Mm. So there's a security aspect to it. People don't want to go there because it's not a great part of town anymore in Joubert Park. So visitor numbers drop off. So there's no sense of a thriving community going mm-hmm. to see the gallery helping, which in itself is a pressure to keep something going well. You know, if you've got people attending your gallery, you make more effort, mm-hmm. I guess. So it's the building is an issue. Where the building is located is an issue. It's the curator. The curator is clearly in a way above his head. Mm. In that, you know, if you can't even keep the gallery kind of clean, there's dead, you know, rats and pigeons and flooding happening. The coffee shop has long been closed. You've got amazing artworks just shoved into filing cabinets. An insider sent us a photo of the Salvador Dali telephone, which is worth north of 20 million rand. It's just in a filing cabinet. You know, these are extraordinary things. So it's the management of the gallery and of the curator. It's the storage of the art. It's the state of the building. And according to a lot of people that I spoke to who work within the city and who really care about our cultural heritage, some of them were curators in other museums, the city is, bad actors in the city are profiteering from this state of chaos because there's no clear catalog or the city won't release it. We asked them for it numerous times. They wouldn't release a catalog to us. The Friends of Joburg, the Friends of the Johannesburg Art Gallery, which is a body that was set up in the 70s, has asked for the catalog. They are not being given the catalog. Why does the city not want to release the catalog? You can only think it's because either artworks have been damaged beyond repair or they have been stolen. So mismanagement actually is at the core of the decay of the Joburg Art Gallery. And it begs the question, if you're not interested in keeping this incredible collection pristine, and if you're not interested in showing it to the people of Johannesburg, then why don't you just relinquish it? Let the private sector come in, and the private sector has been desperately trying to salvage the collection and move it to a place of safekeeping while they then discuss how to sort out the building or does the Joburg Art Gallery move to a different building. So the private sector has been really trying to do its bit to move the collection to a safe place, but the city is not interested. So which one is it? Mm. Are you interested in salvaging the collection or if you are, then do it. Mm. Look after it. And if you're not interested, then let other people do it. But the city sort of wants to have its cake and eat it too. And they came out with a statement last week after Ferial and my articles came out saying these misleading media reports, which I'm sorry, that's nonsense. Our reports are not misleading. We did our research. Weber Wenzel is involved on a pro bono basis to try and force the hand of the city to do something about the collection. There was nothing incorrect or misleading about our reports. And you just wonder why the city is so and intransigent about its duties of care. That's the big question.
I think just with that latter point, I would surmise that first of all, you're dealing with people who really don't have any imagination and sense of the value of a cultural heritage, and that if a city like Joburg cannot sustain this gallery, I imagine in the long run it could end up in another city, which would be an absolute disgrace. But I think you pointed to the issue earlier, and that is the fact is that you're dealing with people whose main eye is on the ability to. It understands it's got a very valuable resource, and it has been probably stolen, sold, whatever it takes to realize the resource. The artistic element has the cultural element just doesn't resonate with the people who run our city. So that would be the one thing. And the other thing is, I mean, I do understand from the articles that the legal processes are complex, but might it not be an element, and not intentional by any stretch, but the fact that the NGOs who are particularly interested, who've been involved, are sort of not fit for the current purpose, where you actually have to deal with a problem like this in a much more aggressive way. Otherwise, you reach the point of no return when you're dealing with an administration like this.
We did ask that question. We said, why has there been so much pussyfooting around? Which is maybe unfair if you're an outsider, so for example, the Anglo-American Johannesburg Centenary Trust, which was a trust established to help acquire art for the collection, they say their mandate is incredibly circumscribed, so they are only there to help acquire art. They cannot step in and manage the collection because that is outside of their mandate. And I understand that. So that's a legal, you know, they're legally defined. And the Friends of Joburg, the Friends of JAG, we talked about how they had become somewhat moribund because they had these directors on the director's role that died. Trying to remove them from the director's role was a bit of a nightmare because you have to get, you know, death certificates. And if you're not a family member, how do you get that, et cetera, et cetera. So to get them removed via SIPSI. I think one of the issues is that they wanted to work with the city. Mm. They didn't want to have an antagonistic relationship with the city because they wanted the city to work with them and vice versa to the benefit of the people of Joburg, to whom this collection actually belongs. The city is not the owner of the collection. And so it was maybe that not wanting to have an antagonistic relationship that meant that they took a more softly approach. I think also they were a bit worried about if you flag the value of these artworks, you know, then you're putting a price tag on it. And if you're open to theft and if you're vulnerable to theft, you know, you're telling someone, oh, look at the Salvador Dali telephone. It's worth, you know, it sold for auction in 2018 for £853,000. Of course, you know, a museum's collection or a public art gallery's collection isn't there to be traded. So maybe actually putting a financial value on it is somewhat the incorrect thing to do. But I think the organizations that were attached to the Joburg Art Gallery were worried that if you made a song and dance about how valuable this collection was, it would become even more vulnerable to theft and to wrongdoing. But I guess it's got to the point where too much of it now is at stake. And so many artworks have been damaged beyond repair that you're going to sort of lose this resource completely. And I think, you know, they just said, okay, enough is enough. We have to play hard ball with the city now, which is why they got Weber Wenzel involved.
No, I think the reality is that so much time has passed since they were originally established, and circumstances have changed so much, and there's so much cynicism about the management of the city in general. I mean, we are up to our eyes in the extent to which Joburg has been poorly managed, and as you say, we see it in the sort of more life and death things. But I would take the view that if you don't preserve aspects of the culture, particularly that have value and that people can benefit from, you know, the life and death things, the city will die, in a way will its soul will die.
Indeed, and you can see that people, you know, whether you're, you know, a white 65-year-old or in your 40s and you've become an art collector, or if you're a black student going to the University of Johannesburg, people are interested in art. Mm-hmm. They, you know, it's an arrogance to think that this is a colonial vanity project of interest only to a certain small sliver of the community. That's nonsense. And you can see it in the demographics that attend art gallery openings at Everard Reed. Or the Joburg Art Fair is a classic example. Mandla Sebeko will tell you of how inclusive and amazing, you know, the art world is. The art world is for everybody. It's an expression of our creativity. So it doesn't matter who you are. If you're a creative, these public galleries, art fairs are really important. And as Federico Freschi said, he's the dean at the Department of Arts at the University of Johannesburg. In any functioning city, this would be the pride of the city. And you can see it in Cape Town. I mean, I mentioned in the article, Zeitz Mokka has 183,000 visitors a year. That's a lot of people. And they're not just tourists. They are people within the city who want to see the collection. The Louvre has over 7 million visitors annually. Weber Wenzel reckons the Joburg Art Gallery drew in 5,000 people per year. But there is interest in creativity, in culture, in art, in sculpture. And so there is a kind of an ignorant arrogance in the city to not expect that of its residents, that there would be this interest. That is my personal view of the matter. But I think it's manifest in the way it's behaved.
I mean, if you look at, if one's traveled overseas to any of the big, not even the big cities, but the big cities, galleries are used for educational purposes, for fun purposes. They are a great environment to have, to get kids and students in to do things and to learn things and to contribute, and the possibilities, particularly with a free sort of heritage museum, is exactly to allow those sorts of things to happen.
Absolutely, and in fact, you know, the powerhouse who set up the Joburg Art Gallery, Lady Florence Phillips, in 1908. What did she call it? The colonial Philistine or the cultural Philistine. I can't remember what exactly the terminology was, but the gallery was set up to improve, all these rough mine workers who had descended on the city of Joburg to try and make a fortune in the gold rush of the 1880s. It was recognized then, and Federico talks about these Edwardian and Victorian notions of what do you call them? Cultural didacticism, where you sort of want to improve the Philistine's mind. But you could say that's also a colonial relic, but not really. As you say, school kids should be exposed to art. They should be exposed to great museums or natural history museums. I'm married to a German, and we go to Germany often. And my daughter, who's six, we take her to these great museums in Frankfurt. The museums that have the Natural History Museum has this fantastic kind of dinosaur collection. Mm. And these are amazing for kids. Mm. So an art gallery is exactly the same. Mm. You know, it will open kids' eyes. It doesn't matter if you're a kid growing up in a really sort of degraded block of flats in Berea, or if you are lucky enough to live in Westcliff. Mm. You know, it can prompt the same experience. Yes. It doesn't matter who you are. You know, these are, and they kind of uplift you. They make you see something that inspires you or vexes you or is just maybe a moment of beauty. Mm. And you don't know how to quantify the impact that may have later in life. Right.
Absolutely. At the risk of going over, one last question. Do we not perhaps have to concede that the Joburg Art Gallery has to be somewhere else? It doesn't have to be in the fancy northern suburbs, but it's a very degraded area. And
I think UCAD could see that. Anglo-American, there were talks that it was going to offer 44 Main Road when it moved out, as nothing was ever signed and it wasn't definite, but there were overtures made by Anglo, which the city didn't take up. Mm. And you just wonder at that. Mm. But yeah, I think it maybe should move maybe to Braamfontein. Mm. You know, maybe to an area that is kind of in a bit of a better state, but it should be moved and it should be open to the public. The public should be able to see the extent of the collection, 9,000 pieces. I mean, the Brenthurst collection, as you say, has been moved back to Brenthurst. Mm. But if you had a secure, decent building that you could bring these pieces back to, it should be open and accessible for the people of Joburg.
There is so much to discuss on this subject, and perhaps even looking at universities and their involvement. Last thing, where can people find you and your site, and possibly looking at taking this matter further?
Yeah, I'm supposed to be working on parts 2 and 3 of the story. The site is www.currencynews.co.za. And thank you very much for having me on your show.
My great pleasure. Thank you, Julieta. Thank you very much.